This past week was a doozy, wasn't it? You start looking back and seeing all the things that you probably did this past week, you'd start saying, how in the world did I fit all that in there? Lots of things happened. I had a nephew that was a senior. He's no longer a senior. He's graduated. I have other children that I know that graduated this past week as well. I have a daughter who is now a senior. I'm way too young for that, but that's just the way it is, I guess. But when you look back, you see some of the great things that happened this past week, some events that some families are celebrating. It's joyous occasions, and then we had some things this past week that were a little more difficult for some families to endure, sicknesses, those that are still dealing with those kinds of things in their lives. So it's just amazing when you stop and you think, man, just a lot goes on in a week's time. Just a lot does. And so we need to be mindful as we go through days and weeks and months and years that we don't forget the important things in life, because we can allow life to go so fast that we lose sight of the overall scheme of things and what's really, really important. And so you have chosen a good way to start your week this week, by coming here, by worshiping the Lord. It's His day. The first day is the Lord's day, and it ought to be, for a number of reasons. It's the first day of the week, the day in which He was resurrected from the dead, but it's the first day of the week. And every first, the best and first things in life ought to go to God, really. And so it's just another reminder to us that we're here to serve God and to worship Him. Over this past week, we've studied some from one of the great characters in the Bible, David, the son of Jesse, of the tribe of Judah. We have about as much written about David as we do almost any other character in the Bible. There is a lot written about him. We have record of his great strength and faith. One of the first things that we're introduced to him about is when he faces the giant Goliath in the battle against the Philistines. We also learn of his failures, his weaknesses, his sin with Bathsheba, the murder of Uriah the Hittite. There's much that we can learn from a study of the life of David. And as we focus in on this past, and focusing in this past month here, on the kings of Israel, the United Kingdom of Israel, we're getting to learn a lot more about him as we read daily about him. When we think about King David, we often think about the way in which Paul describes him when he was talking to the people in Antioch of Pisidia in Acts chapter 13. When he said, and when he had removed him, he raised up David to be their king, of whom he testified and said, I have found in David, the son of Jesse, a man after my heart, who will do all my will. How often when we describe David, when we're talking about David, we go on to say, David, a man after God's own heart. Why is it that David was called a man after God's own heart? We've talked about that in the past, and I would submit to you that there are probably a number of reasons why we could say that David was different than most people in the way that he followed after God, but probably you could summarize it all down. You could kind of just focus it in saying that David's attitude was different than most people. His attitude, his frame of mind, his heart was just different. We know of David's sins. We know how much it grieved and angered the Lord, and yet we also know how David reacted to those sins, how it grieved him, and how he confessed them before God, and how he repented and how he turned from those things. But there's another aspect of his attitude that I want us to talk about for a little while this morning. It's an attitude that all of us need to develop in our own lives. And essentially what it is the willingness to ask God for direction in our lives. To ask Him for direction, and then one specific
response that we'll get sometimes, and how we react to that is learning how to accept when God says no. I think that's important for us to learn. So let's first begin with a recognition, and by the way, I realized since Chris had some technical difficulties, was it last week? Sometime. So I came and I put my little PowerPoint on here, and I've been trying to make it a habit to flip through, make sure everything shows up, and I went flip, and it was blank, and I said, whoa, that ain't good. So there's something about certain kinds of PowerPoint presentations. So you're getting the whole slide all at one time. I don't like to show you everything because you get ahead of me, but that's just the way it's going to be today because I couldn't figure it out. So this is, you'll get the whole slide one at a time. One thing that we learn about David as you were reading back through here this past week, I hope you noticed how many times, especially when he was young, especially when he was running away from Saul, who was seeking after his life, how many times that David inquired of the Lord. That was the phrase that it would use most often in the English Standard Translation. David inquired of the Lord. David asked of God. David sought out the instructions and the direction from God. That's important, isn't it? That someone would have a willingness, a need, a desire to want God to direct his steps. You see, Jeremiah reminds us in Jeremiah 10 and verse 23 that it's not in man to direct his own steps. And David recognized that, and so he often went to God, asking God for help, asking God for direction. One example of that is found over in 1 Samuel chapter 23. In 1 Samuel chapter 23, as he is still running away from Saul, hiding in different places in the wilderness, it says it was told David, behold, the Philistines are fighting against Keilah and are robbing the threshing floors. Therefore David inquired of the Lord, shall I go and attack these Philistines? And the Lord said to David, go and attack the Philistines and save Keilah. He inquired of the Lord. In 1 Samuel chapter 23, later on in that same chapter, verses 7 through 14, he asked God again, will the men of Keilah, now he delivered Keilah from the Philistines. He said, will the men of Keilah offer me up? Will they deliver me to the hand of Saul? He said, yep, they'll do it. Constantly going to God, asking God. In 2 Samuel chapter 2, this is after Saul and Jonathan had been killed in the battle against the Philistines. And David now hears of the news. And Israel has heard of the news. And so David is wondering what to do next. And so it says in verse 1, after this David inquired of the Lord, shall I go up into any of the cities of Judah? Should I go back to the cities of Judah? And David was given an answer by God. The Lord said to him, go up. David said, to which shall I go up? And he said, to Hebron. So David went up there, and his two wives, Ahinoam of Jezreel, and Abigail, the widow of Nabal of Carmel. And David brought up his men who were with him, everyone with his household, and they lived in the towns of Hebron. And the men of Judah came, and they anointed David king over the house of Judah. But he asked God for direction. Even later on, after he had become king over the united nation of Israel again, after the other tribes, not just Judah, but the other tribes, bring him in and anoint him as king over them as well, it says in 2 Samuel chapter 5 and verse 17 that the Philistines went out into the valley of Rephaim. And when they went out there, it says that David in verse 19, inquired of the Lord, shall I go up against the Philistines? Will you give them into my hand? He was now king, not just of Judah, but of Israel, and he was still going to God, asking God for direction. And see, David had a multiplicity of avenues in which he would be able to go to God and ask him. He could go through prophets at times. He could go up through the priest, as he did in one of these instances here, who brought the ephod, you remember? That was in 1 Samuel chapter 23. But whatever the case was, David used the opportunities and the avenues that were present for him to go and to ask and then to inquire of the Lord for direction. David often ask God what he should do. Why would we ask God for direction? Why did David ask God for direction? Well, this was an easy one to answer when I thought about that one. He would ask God, and we should ask God for direction in our lives because, first and foremost, God is omniscient. If you want to know the answer to any question, where are you going to go? You're going to go to an expert. You're going to go to the place where the knowledge is found. Any question in life, God has the answers. He is all-knowing. God is omniscient. So who better to ask than God? But not only that, not only does God know all of the answers, the other thing about God, it is that he is completely righteous and he is completely just. What better person to ask than someone that you know will give you the honest answer, someone who will give you a right answer, someone who will never mislead you? Why would we ask God for help? There's no better person to ask. Well, what about this? When should we ask God for direction? Have you ever used this phrase? Have you ever said it? Maybe even lived it out in your life? It's easier to get forgiveness than permission. Yeah. If you're honest with you, every single person has probably used that thought process in the past. We use it a lot at work. Use it a lot then. Instead of going asking the boss what he wants done, just go do it, and then if he didn't like it, well, it's easier to get forgiveness than it is permission anyway. And when it comes to relationships with men, maybe that is true in some cases. Now, we understand that we use it lightly from that standpoint, right? It's not worthy of their time, or maybe we don't have time to go ask them, and so we do what we think is right, and then ask them, is that what you wanted done? Hopefully that it is. It's the same. But when it comes to our relationship with God, that's the wrong way to go. You see, God deserves, God commands that we ask him first for our direction in life. Everything that we do needs to be guided on the principle of how it affects our relationship with God. And we must at all times be willing to ask him first for direction. Now, I'm going to speak just for about 32 seconds to the graduates. Okay? 32 is all you get. You're about to make some great decisions in life. You're embarking upon a time in which it's just exciting as it can be. Okay? And as you do that, you're going to make decisions that will affect your life and some of your family's life and other people that you know for years and years to come. Here's my advice to you, and it's biblical advice. Don't wait until item number 7 to find out how those decisions will affect your relationship with God. Wrong one. It's number 1. When you think about what you want to do with your life, how you want to live, where you want to live, who you want to see, all those things should say, how is it going to affect my relationship with God? That's number 1. Number 1. And if you're not thinking that way, change the way you're thinking. David inquired of the Lord because he is the right person to ask before you do something, not after you do it and try to justify it. It's too late then. But the same goes for all of us, not just our graduates. In everything that we do, before we do it, how is it going to affect my relationship with God? And if it's not in the right way, if it's not going to lead us closer to God, we need to rethink that one. Redo it. So when? Before we act. How do we go to God for direction? How do we go to him? You see, many people, and you feel this way at times when you're a parent, you feel this way at times, and I was a boss for a little while and glad I got out of that stuff. And you feel this way at times that people come to you and they come into you asking you not really for what the direction ought to be, but really just saying, will you just give me your stamp of approval because this is what I'm going to do. Right? This is what I plan to do and will you give me your approval for it? And if you say no, well, I'm going to do it anyway. It reminds me, Chuck, of Big J. Remember Big J? The movie Big J? At the very first of the movie, that's what John Wayne did. Right? He went in, and I won't get into the movie part of it, but she basically says, well, what's your opinion? He says, don't ask me my opinion on it. You've already made up your mind. Live with it. And that's kind of the way most people are. They've already made up their mind, and then they go to God asking for approval for what they want to do anyway. That's not how we go to God for direction. We go to God for direction willing to accept His direction. Submissive. Humble. Because God is God. And what He says is the way it ought to go. We must humble ourselves before Him in every situation. So then the final question on that is, how can we go to God for direction? Well, as we've already mentioned, David went to Him in a number of different ways because he had those opportunities available to him. But us, we have two primary ways in which we go to God asking for direction. And the first is through prayer. James chapter 1, right? Verse 5. If you like wisdom, let him ask God. How do we ask God for wisdom? Through prayer. But then that leads to the second part in which we go to God, and that is through the things that He's already revealed to us. He's already given us direction for our lives. And so we must study that direction. Meditate upon it. The blessed man, the righteous man in Psalm 1 says that he meditated on the law of the Lord day and night. That's how we ought to be. Constantly searching for God's answers to the questions of life because He's already provided us with direction. Many times, we'll go to God asking for direction. And we've already got our minds made up as to what we believe is the right answer. This is the way that it ought to be. Now let's go see if God agrees with me or not. Right? And so sometimes when we go to God in that way, we get a no. No, that's not the right way. That's not what you should do. And sometimes then it becomes very difficult for us to deal with. Why would God tell us no? Well, sometimes this no answer, we need to understand a couple of things about it before we get into that. We need to understand that no is not a refusal to give us an answer, but rather that His answer is not in agreement with ours. Okay? And the other thing we need to understand is that God has the right to say no. He has the right to say no. Do you realize that God is the ultimate power in the universe? Do you realize that God is the creator of all things? Do you realize that God created you? And therefore, as the clay, we have no right to tell the potter he can't do what he wants to do. He has every right. He has every authority. And so if God says no, He has the right to say that. So if we go into it understanding that to start with, then we might ask the questions, but why would God ever tell us no? Why would God say, no, that's not the right way? Well, here are a few reasons. And again, you're getting them all at one time. Okay. Number one, God might tell us no simply to teach us obedience and submission. Have you ever thought about that very much? That the reasons why God gives us certain instructions, certain things to do in life, is so that it might teach us to be obedient to Him. Remember, we talked about last week how that obedience is taking God's will, remember the circles? God's will and engulfing our will, such that it's only God's will. God might have certain things in mind for us just to teach us obedience. Say, are you sure about that? Well, how about this? Do you realize that that's essentially what Jesus did? Caleb read from Luke chapter 23 this morning as we partook of the Lord's Supper. But the chapter prior to that, in chapter 22, it tells us of when Jesus was in the Garden of Gethsemane. He was on the Mount of Olives, and He was there with His disciples, and specifically some of His closest disciples. But He went off, He left them, and He went a little further to pray, and He said, Father, let this cup pass from me, but not as my will, but as your will. Jesus was praying that if there's a different way, Father, can we do this a different way? You know what the answer was? No, there's not a different way.
This is the way. And you notice what the Hebrew writer says in Hebrews chapter 5 and verse 7 in thinking about that particular instance, that particular event in Jesus' life. In the days of his flesh, Jesus offered up prayers and supplications with loud cries and tears to him who was able to save him from death, and he was heard. God heard him. Because of his reverence, although he was a son, he learned obedience through what he suffered. And being made perfect, he became the author or the source of eternal salvation to all who obey him. Jesus learned obedience when God said, no, there's not another way. This is the way. I wonder if God tells us no sometimes because he says, you need to learn to be obedient. How about this? Sometimes God says no because we don't ask in faith. Over in James chapter 1, we've already kind of mentioned it a little bit. In James chapter 1, beginning in verse 5, he says, if any of you lacks wisdom, let him ask God, who gives generously to all without reproach, and it will be given to him. But let him ask in faith, with no doubting, for the one who doubts is like a wave of the sea that is driven and tossed by the wind. For that person must not suppose that he will receive anything from the Lord. He is a double-minded man, unstable in all his ways. Sometimes God says no because we don't ask in faith. Now, what does that mean, we don't ask in faith? Well, we've already said that God has ultimate power. God can do anything as long as it's in accordance with his character and his will. So if God says no, it's not because he's incapable of doing it. So we must believe that he's capable of doing whatever. But our faith is also, praying in faith also means that we have knowledge of his will, we have knowledge of his character, and we won't ask for things that are outside of those. We won't ask him to do something that would go against his nature and against his character and against his will. Father, I know you want me to live this way, but I'd rather do this. So please let me live this way. No, that's not asking in faith. Maybe he says no because we don't ask right. Maybe he says no because we ask for the wrong things and for the wrong reasons. James chapter 4 and verse 3. You ask amiss, with the wrong purpose, with the wrong motives. Maybe you asked for something that was right, but you did it so that you could glorify yourself. Maybe he says no. Maybe God says no sometimes because we're just too short-sighted. We don't see the big picture. And you know why we don't see the big picture? Because we're not God. God can not only see how it affects us now, but he can see how it affects those people around us and how it'll affect us years to come. God can see all of those things. We can't see them. We can't see. Now, as we grow older, we have a tendency to be able to see a bigger and bigger picture, but we can't see God's picture. So maybe sometimes he says no because we're too short-sighted, too narrow-focused. We can't see it all. And then sometimes God may say no because, well, quite simply, God knows what's best for us. I want you to turn with me over to 2 Corinthians chapter 12 real quick. 2 Corinthians chapter 12. In this particular passage, Paul he's basically making a defense of his apostleship before the Corinthians. And he is telling them about a time when he was able to see visions of the Lord, such that he was able to know certain revelations from God. And because of this vision and because of these revelations, it says in verse 7 of chapter 12, so to keep me from being conceited because of the surpassing greatness of the revelations, a thorn was given me in the flesh, a messenger of Satan to harass me, to keep me from becoming conceited. Three times I pleaded with the Lord about this, that it should leave me. But he said to me, my grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness.
Therefore, I will boast all the more gladly of my weaknesses, so that the power of Christ may rest upon me. For the sake of Christ, then, I am content with weaknesses, insults, hardships, persecutions, and calamities. For when I am weak, then I am strong. Paul had this thorn in the flesh, and he prayed to God 3 times. Do you think he really wanted to get rid of it? 3 times he prayed that this should leave me. And you know what God said? No. Why? To keep me from becoming conceited. You see, God knew what was best for him. God understood what was best for Paul. And God said, nope. Have you ever thought that sometimes God doesn't give us what we ask for because he knows we can't handle it? God doesn't allow us to be tempted above what we're able. Maybe sometimes he prevents us from having certain things because that temptation would be too great. There are reasons why God would say no. So the question is, when God does say no, how do we react to it? You see, David was told no more than once. Back in 2 Samuel chapter 5, verses 22 through 25, just after he had went and inquired of the Lord to go up against the Philistines in the valley of Rephaim, and God said, yep, go up, I'll deliver them. And he went up and he defeated them. Just a verse after that, it says that the Philistines went out again into the valley of Rephaim, and David inquired of the Lord again, shall I go up against them? And he said, no. He says, you go around behind them. And after you go around behind them, when you hear the sound of the marching in the tops of the balsam trees, then you know that I have gone out, and then you rouse yourself up. He said, no. You don't do that. In chapter 7, David told Nathan, he says, you know what? I want to build a temple. I want to build a permanent dwelling place. God's ark, God's altar, the site. It's been moving around in something that's, you know, movable. I want to make it permanent. Nathan said, go ahead. Do what all your heart desires there. But then God told Nathan, no, you go to him and tell him no. And that's what Nathan went and told him. Nathan went and said, God said, no. It's not yours. It's going to be your son's, not yours. And then the time in chapter 12, after his sin with Bathsheba, and she was pregnant with a child, after Uriah had been murdered, after she had mourned for him and David had brought her into his house as his own wife, after Nathan had went in and told him the parable of the rich man who had many flocks and many lambs, and then he stole the one little ewe lamb from the one poor man so that he might offer it up for the traveler that came through. And David was angry and said the man should die, and Nathan said, you're the man. After he confessed that he had sinned, and Nathan said, God has forgiven you the sin, but the child is going to die. And the child became sick. And David fasted. He prayed, asking God to preserve the life of the child. God said no. Or he didn't bend his will to David's. David understood what it was like to hear the word no. But what's important is how David reacted in each one of those cases. You see, in each one of those cases, David first reacted by accepting God's answer. We said this a while ago. God has the right to say no. And David understood that. And so he accepted God's answer. What could he have said when he said, let me go up against the Philistines. They've come back out in this valley and I want to go up and beat them again. And nope, don't go. But wait a minute, I just defeated them. I can do this. Look at how many battles I've already won. I'm a great warrior. I can go do this. Let me go do it. He didn't say that, did he? Or how about when he wanted to build the temple, a permanent dwelling? I've got all of these resources. I've defeated all these people. I got all this money and all that. I can do this. I want to glorify God in this way, and I can do it this way. So that's what I'm going to... He didn't say that, did he? Or how about when the child was dying? He says, why would God cause this innocent life to die? He forgave me. You see, in each situation when he was told no, David simply accepted God's answer. He didn't argue. He didn't complain. He didn't bargain with God. But he accepted the answer. Now, that asked you, or made me ask the question, can we never ask God why? Can we never ask God, why can't we do this? And I think I need to be careful in answering that question. And you need to be careful in answering that question. Because it's really all a matter of attitude. Why do you want to know? I think of the example over in Luke chapter 1. You remember in Luke chapter 1, the angel Gabriel appeared to Zechariah and told him, he says, you're going to have a son. Now, he and his wife, they were barren. They didn't have a child, and they were past the childbearing age. And yet Gabriel said, you're going to have a son. How can that be? And he goes on to tell him that he can be. And he says, and because you did not believe, you're going to be mute till the child is born. You see, he asked why. He asked how, because he didn't believe it. Whereas later in that same chapter, when the angel Gabriel appeared to Mary, a virgin, and said, you're going to have a child. And she said, well, how can this be when she didn't have a... She was not married yet. She had never had any relations with man. And yet her how was not, I don't believe it won't happen. I just don't know how it's going to happen. See, it's all a matter of attitude, isn't it? When we ask God, why not? Why are we asking? Is it just so that we can understand better what God wants in our lives? Or is it because we want to argue with God, you know what, you made a mistake? We need to be careful when we ask God that question. We need to accept his answer. He has the right to say it. We need to accept it just as David did. But then we need to do the other thing that David did in each one of those cases. And that is, he went on about doing God's will. You know, God told him, no, you don't go up against the Philistines. You go around behind and you wait on me. You know what he did? He went around behind and waited on him. And because of that, he gave him the victory in the battle. He told David, no, you can't build the temple for me. Your son is going to build the temple. You know what he did? He thanked God and praised God in that same chapter, 2 Samuel chapter 7, because God had given him some further promises. He thanked God and glorified God and praised him for the promises that he gave him. And then it tells us in Chronicles that he went on to make preparations for the temple, because he knew it was going to be a great work for his son Solomon. So he gathered up all kinds of resources, gold and silver and bronze and nails of iron and stoneworkers and hewn cutters and all. I mean, just keep going and going. All so that Solomon could be ready to work on it. He prepared the leaders. You help Solomon. Solomon's going to build the temple. He did what he could and what God wanted him to. And then in the death of his son, he worshiped God. He made a determination to serve God. Do you remember what he said when they came to him? Remember, he had been fasting. He wouldn't take any food from them. He was just in awful shape. And he was in that way for a week. And then the child died, and the servants were afraid to tell him that the child had died. They were afraid he would hurt himself because of how distraught he was already when the child was alive. Now what is he going to do to himself now that the child is dead? And he perceived that the child was dead. He says, is the child dead? Yes, he's dead. And he got up and he washed himself and he went and he worshiped. And they said, what? We don't understand. What are you doing? He says, I can't bring the child back, but I can go to him. Sounds like a determination to do whatever you can to go see him, doesn't it? And he also comforted his wife, by the way. He did what he could. When God says no, we accept His answer, and then we do what we can and what He tells us to. I hope this lesson has helped to help you to understand that we need to be searching for answers from God more often in our lives, just like David did. And we need to understand that sometimes when we ask God for instruction, sometimes when we ask God, is this the right thing to do, that sometimes He's going to say, no, that's not the right thing to do. See, many people have a misunderstanding of certain Bible passages that say that if you pray, that God is going to give it to you. Like James chapter 1 and others. James chapter 5, verse 16 and 17. Luke chapter 18, verse 1. Mark chapter 11 and verse 24. And they take those passages and twist them and basically say that as long as we believe that God can do it, when we ask Him, He's bound and obligated to do it. And that's just wrong. He's not obligated to do that. If God was obligated to fulfill every whim and wish that we have, then basically He would be obeying us instead of the other way around. We must be willing to ask God for direction in our lives, and then when He gives us the answer, and we have the answers, we must be willing to accept it and obey it. So what about you this morning? Are you seeking the direction from God that you need to be seeking? Have you been following His path? If you haven't, you can change. And you can follow Him this morning, and we can help you in doing that.